Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is Thursday, June 7th, 2012. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tonight, an introduction to Eco Villages with Makeko Tamarice. She's president of the European chapter of the Global Village Network and member of the Domenhur Eco Village in northern Italy. We recorded her this morning since Italy is so far ahead. It's a wonderful introduction, and I'm really delighted we could talk about it this evening. I'm headed on Saturday to Cincinnati, where I'm going to be for the next 6 weeks, except with a trip to North Carolina next week. We'll be having our next luncheon for subscribers on June 30th in Cincinnati. If you'd like to join us, just sign up at the blog. There's a little box saying Lunch with Catherine. Click that, and you can reserve for yourself and a guest. Our theme tonight is Consider the Trees. It was inspired by a wonderful video. It's up on the blog under the Life section. It's an interview with Dr. Suzanne Simard of British Columbia. She's a forester who's describing how trees communicate through their root system and help each other survive and thrive. And it's a little reminder, if the trees can cooperate, so can we. Money and markets. To say that the financial and commodities markets were on pins and needles all week, waiting to see what the Fed will do, again, their big meeting coming up on June 20, is an understatement. Gold started June at about 1600. It ran up almost to 1640 yesterday and then sunk 50 points this morning. The reason given was that Ben Bernanke was very circumspect about what, if anything, he would do. We see tremendous tensions in the Eurozone. Over the weekend, George Soros on Friday gave a speech proposing more centralized economic control in Europe. We have Stiglitz disagreeing with Soros but saying, yes, we need more centralized economic control of fiscal authority. Spain also wants a new euro fiscal authority, they're saying. And the reality is that more central control is not going to solve anything. It is true that one of the problems was that there was no budgeting mechanism in place to stop the sort of fraudulent inducement of debt. But more central control is simply going to shut off the economy and stop the market solutions that need to happen if you're going to mark to market. We did a special Solari report. I didn't want to wait because of the events unfolding in Greece. I called up John Laughlin in Paris last week and said, look, we've got to do a special interview. We posted that on the blog Friday. It's great background and great insight on what is happening right now in Europe, and I recommend that to you strongly. We also have links to John's book on the European Union and a link, if you go through the blog posts, on his wonderful article, Why the Euro Will Fail. But I think you will really enjoy that. He points out that the knack, the people centralizing in Europe have an amazing knack of getting their way, and I think that that was one of his great insights. But it's appropriate we're talking about eco-villages this evening because as further rounds of centralization shut down and shut off the economy, particularly the small business and entrepreneurial economy, we see more people gathering locally, including in eco-villages, to rebuild away from the central control. And so they're literally eco-villages is part of that sort of local response to what we're seeing. Not unrelated to the Eurozone policies, we had Bilderberger meeting in Chantilly, Virginia, from May 30th to June 30th. Oddly enough, for many years, there's been a press blackout of the Bilderbergers, and we see a few reporters doing yeoman effort to really promote the fact that this group and its meetings are important. It started with journalist Jim Tucker from The Spotlight, and then Daniel Estulin, who's joined us on the Solari Report, covered the Bilderbergs more from the European point of view, and finally Alex Jones has jumped in. And we have so much alternative press coverage of the Bilderbergers, they've been forced, this is unbelievable to me, to put up an official website and publish an official participant group, which of course does not include all the participants, but it's quite a concession on the part of the Bilderbergers to have been forced to do that by the alternative press. Interestingly enough, though, there are less rumors than ever coming out of the Bilderberg meeting. I've never seen it as tight as this. One of the rumors is that Mitch Daniels has been chosen to be Romney's VP candidate. Again, that's only a rumor, but it's a very intriguing rumor if it's true. The Bushies, Mitch Daniels is the governor of Indiana. He's from the Bush camp, a Bushie on the ticket with Romney indicates there may be more support from the Bush faction, which is, of course, the most powerful part of the Republican Party. Daniels ran the Office of Management and Budget for George W. Bush. That's a very critical position, and if you're serious about reengineering the U.S. federal budget and the economy, which, of course, is likely, we're approaching a fiscal cliff or falling off a fiscal cliff after the election, that's exactly the kind of person you'd want in there. The Bushes know a lot about how to control the government from the VP spot. When George H.W. Bush made the deal with the Reagan administration to be VP, he went in controlling enforcement and the intelligence agencies, and really after the president was shot in the attempted assassination attempt, George H.W. Bush, as a practical matter, ran the National Security Council. So the Bushies know a lot about how to control the government from the VP spot, particularly if it's somebody who knows the nuts and bolts of the budget and control of the regulatory apparatus, which the former director of Office and Management and Budget would know how to do. So it's a very interesting pick if it's true, and it probably ups the chances that Romney is a serious contender. So let's see what emerges. More continued concern in the world about a possible China slowdown. Again, as I've said many times on the Saleri Report, China's biggest customer is the Eurozone, so the slowdown in the Eurozone is bound to translate into a slowdown in China. Fukushima combined with high oil prices continue to hurt Japan, so Asia is struggling. The tensions regarding Syria continue to rise. The administration is now in a real dance with Putin now that he's been confirmed and is back in the number one spot in Russia. But there's a real dance between the United States and Russia. So what's going to happen next? And the possibility of intervention in war continue, including right before the election. So keep an eye on what's going to happen in the Middle East. The U.S. economy is still struggling. There's very strong financial crisscross going on, cross currents in housing, different disputes by the pundits on whether housing prices have bottomed out. On one hand, you have quantitative easing continue to support the housing prices, very, very low interest rates, and doing a lot to keep the housing market supported. But, of course, there continues to be a significant foreclosure backlog. And, of course, the $64,000 question is after the election, with federal, state, and local government having to make significant cutbacks, what's that going to do to housing? The equity markets continued to struggle. They opened the month one place, dropped dramatically, and have bounced back up, including today. Facebook, the stock, went as low as 25.5. Friends out in Silicon Valley started referring to the IPO as Facebook. The next week they referred to it as Faceberg, and now they're referring to it as Faceplant. But it's a remarkable drop, and really not a good drop for confidence in the stock market. Politics, we've seen Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin was not recalled. He got 53% of the vote. You have to wonder whether there was voter fraud there. Hard to believe that a recall might not work, although as one of my colleagues points out, recalls are hard to do. I posted, next year is the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination, and great colleague of mine sent me a new book called Mary Mosaic, The CIA Conspiracy to Murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and Their Vision for World Peace. And he's been bugging me for months to read it, and I finally sat down, started this week, and literally could not put it down, ended up posting a review on the blog called Mary's Mosaic, and ended up sending a note of congratulations to the author. It's an absolutely remarkable book. John Rappaport and I are going to do a series on the best books for the 20th century. I assure you this one will be on it. But I would encourage you to take a look at the review on the blog. And I think for anyone interested in recent American history and sort of the true story of how the world works, beautifully written, it's a remarkable book, and I recommend it to you. Certainly check out the review. The UK Supreme Court has voted to extradite Julian Assange of WikiLeaks to Sweden. However, the Assange's British attorneys think there is a possibility of reopening the case with the Supreme Court, and so that story continues to be fluid. There's two very important pieces on the pension funds that I posted on the blog this week. In fact, they could be two of the most important stories this week in terms of what's going to impact the well-being and health and wealth of the people listening to this phone call. One is a New York Times article about the rosy return assumptions for public pension funds. The big pension funds are assuming a 7 to 8% return assumption on current assets, and that has a profound and dramatic impact on how much money is asked to be contributed by the underlying governmental entities. And given the drop in yields in the market, both in the equity market and the bond market, 7 to 8%, which doesn't seem unreasonable historically, is looking very, very rosy. And, of course, if the pension funds have to change that, it could have a very big impact on state and local government. In addition, we see a fascinating story coming out of the AFL-CIO on the Texas teacher retirement pension system. The CIO, a gentleman named Harris, has given, awarded big money to KKR and other LBO funds. KKR is one of the players highlighted in the Dylan Reed story that I published. KKR was in charge of RJR Nabisco at the time that the European Union described in their lawsuit suing about money laundering by RJR Nabisco, including with Latin American drug cartels, Saddam Hussein's family, the Russian mafia, and on and on. It's quite a global organized crime thriller. So we have the Texas teacher retirement investing significant monies with KKR, and sure enough, they turn up, the chief investment officer turns up at the Bilderberger conference, which of course is one of the people always present at Bilderberger is representatives of KKR. So you kind of wonder whether or not the prudent man rule controls at the Texas teacher retirement, or rather connections to the Bilderberger control. And I think that's a very important question given what we've seen the pension funds do. In the story on the blog, I put up the story again of my experience with the president of CalPERS, indicating that, in fact, capital was allocated not by what was in the best interests of beneficiaries, not what was sort of dictated by federal and state and local law, but instead by outside forces outside the pension fund. A very chilling story and worth understanding. There's wanted to point out a couple of videos on the blog. There's a great video, short video, on the relationship between nutrition and depression. It's quite interesting and short. That's under Food and Health. Science and Technology. George Ure had a very interesting point up on his blog, and I put it up as a quote. He says, most folks haven't grokked what Honda's got going in the wings with their Asimo program. That's their robot program. But the answer is simple. Asimo, with a few tweaks and a credit card scanner, can wipe out virtually every job in retail, including pizza delivery and even housekeeping. I put up one of the videos of the Asimo robotics, and it's worth taking a look at because, in fact, robotics over the next 5 to 10 years do have the ability to devastate service industry employment, and something I think we need to anticipate and think about and be prepared for. Under the topic of wild cards, we have Fox News doing an interview by phone with astronaut Edgar Mitchell saying that aliens exist. And Mitchell, of course, a former astronaut, is not saying anything new. He's been saying this for a long time. What is new is that Fox News is now sending this message into middle America on its morning news shows. Why do I mention this? Put aside whether aliens exist or not, be aware of a story, and I'll use this as an example. Wernher von Braun was quoted on his deathbed in the early 70s as confiding his fears about the weaponization of space. He identified the scare tactics as to artificial threats that would convince the public to accept space-based weapons. The first threat was Russians and communists. We've all heard that one. The second was terrorists. We've all heard that one. The third was third world country crazies, the access of evil nations of concern. The fourth was asteroids. We've heard those too. And the fifth and final one was aliens. So beware how this information is used and presented. Our hero of the week, of course, is the new graduates of 2012. We put it up on the top of the blog. Many families in our subscriber base and many of my colleagues have been attending graduation ceremonies as sons and daughters and grandchildren and nephews and nieces and friends of kids of friends have been graduating both from high school and college. It's a wonderful time, and it's a new wave of young people coming out and facing a changing world, and it's time to make their contribution. We invite you to post the best advice you ever got as a graduate or have heard. We'd love to get a compendium of the best of the best of advice to graduates, and we'll put it up on the blog. In Ask Catherine, we have a question about J.P. Morgan's derivative books from a wonderful subscriber out in Ohio. J.P. Morgan's derivative books are a real concern. The potential to take down the banking system is small. This is my response to him. J.P. Morgan's derivative books are a real concern. The potential to take down the banking system is small given the too big to fail policies of G8. The potential to destroy civilization ultimately are real, and that's, of course, because derivatives have been critical to helping literally fraudulently induce the planet with debt. And they're also critical to keep the slow burn going in a way that is very, very damaging to the health of the underlying economy. I keep getting questions on Fukushima. We continue to look for credible authorities. There's wide divergence of opinions in terms of, and from people who I consider to be reliable. So it's a bit confusing to try and sort it out, but just rest assured we understand it's a very important issue and continue to look for somebody or a group of people that we can trust to speak to Fukushima. So that's it for the wrap-up and Ask Catherine this evening, and so let's turn to Echo Villages. Earlier today, we interviewed and recorded our interview with Makiko Tamari, so let's play it now. Well, welcome to the Soleri Report. We're going to be talking with Makiko Tamari, and who's coming to us from Italy, and we've had all sorts of experiments this morning on how to get her recorded and online. So this time we're doing something unusual, recording from through Skype. And I met her in Switzerland last year at a wonderful conference at the top of the Alps and was unbelievably impressed at her ability to communicate about this world of eco villages and a whole dynamic and movement which is growing very dynamically all over the world. And this is a subject which I think is of interest to many of our subscribers, and so I was delighted that she took time from her very busy schedule to join us. She is not only a member and a leader, first of all, she's an artist, a very gifted musician, and involved in her own Echo Village, her community of Domin here in northern Italy, but she's also assumed the presidency of GEM, the Global Echo Village Network, and that keeps her traveling the world and very busy. So we're very pleased that you could join us, Makiko. Are you with us?
Oh, yes, I'm here. Thank you so much, Catherine, for your very nice words. It's such a pleasure being with you.
Well, tell us.
I have so good memories of our meeting.
Yes, it was a real pleasure to be in that conversation with you. So tell us, and assume that many of us are very new to this topic, what are eco villages and why are they growing?
Eco villages are sustainable human settlements that are sustainable in the four dimensions, in the soul, in the worldview, in the ecological, and in the economic. So This means that actually eco-villages are places that have a very holistic point of view of the world and a very holistic worldview. And I think this is also one of the reasons why they are spreading and continue to spread and over the world, especially in this moment of time where it looks like things and many of the beliefs that we had and of the systems are a little bit crumbling down and people are looking for new models and new recipes to find a way to live a happy life. And I think eco-villages really try to create a platform for people to live a happy life, a fulfilled life in relationship and in deep respect with nature and with the other human beings.
Whenever I was thinking before we got on today in preparation, and one of the things I realized is whenever I've been in an eco-village or with people from an eco-village, I think of it as a place where you're encouraged to be human.
Yeah.
Because there's so many places now throughout our society globally where things don't feel quite human. And they always do inside of an eco-village.
Yeah.
Now tell me.
I think this is very true. I mean, what people are really looking for, I mean, why do people go and live in an eco-village? Because in a certain sense, of course, it means that you've really changed your life very, very strongly, in a very strong way. And so, I think I just want to explain something about the four dimensions of eco-villages, because when I talk about the social dimension, I mean that people are looking to create new models of life, of society, how to live together, and how to do that in a fulfilling and in a way where really everybody can express their talents and their possibilities at the most, instead of being pushed into an angle.
Uh-huh.
And so, for example, something that, especially as far as the social is concerned, there are lots of tools for communication, lots of tools for conflict solution, for facilitation, and most important really is that there is a participatory decision making inside of eco-villages, so that really everybody feels involved in being part of the project that is being created. And everybody has a voice, is heard, and is accepted by the others. And the others very often really function like a mirror for the individual, so that the individual can learn a lot about themselves. And so eco-villages always also have a very strong focus on individual development and individual transformation. And as the worldview is concerned, you have many different eco-villages have different worldviews, which means also different spiritual angle to it. But there's always this very broad idea of spirituality in a certain sense, where under spirituality really is meant the contact with the best parts inside of yourself, and aspiring to high ideals, to universal values, and that can be expressed in very different ways in the different eco-villages. And then the ecological really, of course, is the most obvious because it means sustainability. And sustainability means really to have a deep respect for nature and so to try to live together with nature and to create things together with nature rather than against nature or exploiting nature. And of course, also brings the economical with it because in a place like this, to look for a fair, for just economy amongst the members is something that comes natural.
I've done several conferences with a group from the farm, which is an intentional community,
and
I guess Eco Village here in Tennessee. And mm-hmm. I'm always struck because the members of the farm are kind of sneaking around the conference, helping make things work right. It's as though they know an awful lot about group dynamics and have tremendous experience, and they leave their egos at the door and are just making, you know, working, sort of sneaking around, making things work successfully. And it's quite wonderful to watch them, and you realize that they have, as a group, evolved to a much higher level of human participation and communication. It's very inspiring. Okay, so tell us a little bit about how you came to be personally in an Echo Village and how that experience has been for you. And maybe if you could just tell us a little bit about Dom and her.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so my personal background really is I'm a jazz singer, so I've been touring a lot around the world before coming to Damanhur, and I think that the last tour that I did that was in Japan, which was a long tour of 2 months, was very important because I had really success, and I could have stayed in Japan becoming a famous jazz singer and developing my future life in Japan, which was also interesting and nice to do. And then I suddenly realized that I was not looking for success in this life, that I was looking for something different. I was looking for real people with real things, not something like success, which is very ephemeral, but I was looking for real values, for real people, for real things. And I already knew Damanhur by then, and so when we came back, I decided to try out to see whether Damanhur could be a solution instead of continuing my previous life. And so this is exactly what I did. And I must say I've been living now for 18 years in Damanhur, which is quite a while already. And there was not one day in which I regretted my choice. So I feel very happy and very fulfilled, and I learned so much about myself. I had the possibility to develop so many of my talents of the sides that I did not even know about, and to change some more angle sides into more smoothie sides, and all that, you know, that really happens while you live together with people.
Well, I should also point out your Echo Village happens to be in a very beautiful place, and you've got an amazing group of artists there. So maybe
yes,
if you could just
true.
Tell us a little bit about Damanhur, because it is
very
special place.
So Damanhur is an eco-society, actually. It's a very big community of about 1,000 people, of which 600 full-time residents, situated in the north of Italy, on the foothills of the Alps. And these 600 people that live completely inside the community live in smaller nucleo communities, or we call them also families or nucleos, from 15 to 25 people, where we have all the different ages present, and where we have in every nucleo, and where you choose your nucleo according to a specific function, to a specific theme of the nucleo. So actually Damanhur is a federation of communities, and every single community of these single entities, they have their own a specific goal inside of the federation. So for example, the community where I live has the goal of exchanging with international communities, while our neighbors have the task to experiment with renewable energies, and so they have lots of photovoltaic and solar and a solar concentrator and here and there, and they're always trying out with different things. Then there are other communities that take care, for example, of agriculture. Another one takes care of the temples of humankind. The temples of humankind is a huge underground building. It's excavated in the mountains and full of art, as you said. And this is really how we became, let's say, known, well-known in the world, because somebody refers to the temples also as the eighth wonder of the world, because it is really huge and very beautiful. And what is more interesting is that it really is an art of the people. So it's not that there is one specific artist who did some great things or something like this, but it really is a way to give voice to our true art, to our values, to what we think is really important for the human being, and to express what we think matters. And so the temples of humankind are really a huge artwork. And and then another nucleo, I was coming back to the nucleos. Another nucleo is, for example, responsible for education, another one for hospitality, and so on. As many nucleos as there are, so many functions there are. And this allows the whole of Damanhur, because, of course, everybody of these single nucleos do all the different things. We all are active in education. We all have photovoltaic and solar panels and so on. But this gives us a very strong velocity, because having one specific nucleo researching in that specific field and then bringing back the information to the whole of Damanhur allows the whole of Damanhur to continuously raise the level of research and of things that are going on. So there's a very quick growth in different fields. Mm. And the artistic field for sure is a very important one, because I think that at Damanhur we consider ourselves as a people of researchers and artists. And of artists also because we think that creativity is very, very important, because when you are creative, you are really in touch with these inner deep parts where you give something of yourself to the others, and not only, you create something new, so you become really creative in the real sense of the world. And this is something that I think most of the people who are creative, and I think you can be creative in many different ways, not only by doing artwork, but also in any kind of work, you can become creative. And that gives you always this kind of, that you are in the right track, you know, I feel it like being on the right track.
Well, I think that's extremely important, because if you look around the world, there is no doubt that, I always say we have a failure of imagination. So anything that encourages people to use their imagination and to, you know, to come to their power in that way is very life-changing and transformative. So I couldn't agree more. Now, tell us, who does well living in an eco-village and who does not do well? What's the kind of person who's happy in an eco-village?
Well, I think there's one main characteristic. First, of course, you have to share the ideals of the eco-village you're going to live in, because it's very important to have shared common dream, to have shared ideals. And then I would say that the next step really is, from my point of view, what's very important is that the people who are going to live in an eco-village are willing to question themselves and to be willing for the path of transformation, to change, to really be willing to let to come deeper to your own essence while being more flexible on your borders. And I think this is something that is very necessary. If you find people who just think that they are right and that they don't want to question themselves, then the eco-village is not the right place for them.
Right. And is there, on the GEN website, is there a definition of what an eco-village is?
Yes, there is. And we have just been working out a new definition, but I don't have it under, I don't know it by heart yet, but I can find it out, but I don't have it yet.
Okay.
But we have just been working on a new one, which is a very nice one, actually.
Okay, well, we'll stay tuned on the GEN website. Okay, so let's say, and this happens to me a lot with clients and subscribers, where I'm asked by someone, could an eco-village be the right kind of place for me? Because I think there's so many people today who are looking for community and looking for a place to live which is more sane than where they are now. So let's say I'm sitting listening to this conversation and I'm interested in learning about eco-villages, but I know nothing. What are the steps I can take to learn about and visit and get to know eco-villages, just in the possibility that I may be interested in joining one or even starting one?
Yeah, I think there are many different ways to do that. So one thing is, for example, to go on the GEN Euro website, because the GEN Euro website is the most up-to-date at the moment. And I just found it, so for also the definition, I will read you what the definition is,
okay,
because it's very nice. It says, GEN consists of a constantly expanding network of intentional communities and eco-villages bridging all cultures and continents. GEN envisions the emergence of a diverse yet shared global pool of wisdom for sustainable living. GEN believes that the most underutilized resource we have is the good intentions and creativity of citizens and our willingness to make a difference. And GEN promotes the building of community and solidarity as a core to transition to resilience. So this is really a very nice, I think, a very nice definition about what Gen is and what eco-villages are. So, for example, inside of the Gen website, you will also find, which, by the way, is www.gen/europe.org/. And with this, there you can find all the different communities, and you can see what are the communities that attract you most. So where you feel your heart is beating while you're reading the introduction of the communities. Mm-hmm. And then here in Europe, of course, I know more about the European eco-villages, as I'm the president of the European part of the Gen as well. So in Europe, we have 5 very big communities and then many smaller communities, but 5 very big communities that are all very, very interesting and have all existing for longer than 15 or 30 years. And it's FinTorn even 40. So it's becoming really very, very a long time that eco-villages are existing. We have been existing, Damanhur has been existing for 37 years, and we are close to our 38th year. So it really shows that it's not a phenomena that is just coming and going, but it's something that can also really last in time.
Uh-huh.
And and I think a good way to do is to go, for example, also to Gaia Education is a program. It's an educational program that has grown out of the of Gen many years ago, and that they together. A curriculum for a course was developed, for a one-month course, more or less, that is called EDE, Eco-Village Design Education Course. Mm-hmm. And that just finished a few days ago here in Damanhur. It was a beautiful course with many people from 10 different countries, and it's a course where you really learn about how to build an eco-village.
Right.
So you can also go to GaiaEducation.org. And find some more information there. And then, of course, the best way is really to go and visit eco-villages, because all the eco-villages, or most of the eco-villages, offer educational programs and are also training centers. So, for example, here in Damanhur, we have many courses going on all the time and many different visitors days and situations and, I mean, packages that you can take. And I think this is true for all the different eco-villages.
Most eco-villages have a website, it's my impression.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can also find them on the Gen Europe website.
It's interesting. I went to the Gen website and pulled up the map, and I was astonished. You know, there's a little dot for every place there's an eco-village, and I was astonished. And
yes.
How many, it seems to me like it's growing relatively quickly. Is that correct?
I think so, especially in places where you would not suspect them to grow. There's a huge movement at the moment in the Southern American continent. There's just a new network has been creating that is also collaborating with Gen and maybe will be part of Gen. This is still to know. Which is still to see, but this is called CASA, and they also include ecological projects and many other things. There's a very exciting moment happening in the world, and more eco-villages are being born. Though from the last years, it looked like in Europe there were no new eco-villages, but this was not true. It was just that we did not know about them.
Uh-huh.
So actually, there are different new eco-villages has been born also here in Europe. But all over the world, actually, there is a movement towards eco-villages.
And if I want to start an eco-village instead of just join one, are all the resources that you just described also a way I can learn about that? How you start one?
So. Yes. Yeah. Of course, you have to, you know, as I said before, the different, you have to learn a lot before you can start an eco-village. You have to really get a little bit into the matter and find out about the different possibilities that there are, the different ways, how different communities have done it in a different way. You know, we are all similar, though very diverse. So it's really important to see also really where you feel most aligned with, you know, what calls you more. so that you can from there go and look. And then I really would say go and look. And then do an EDE course, because the EDE course is really an incredible course. Also, it does not only give you incredible tools, but it also is a whole personal transformational process. Mm-hmm. So it's really something very exciting. And then, for example, again, on the Gaia Education website, you will find also the curriculums where you have different books that are called the keys, that are about economy, about the social, and about ecology. The spiritual one is not yet out. There will be also an article of mine in it. And that are free, downloadable for free. So you can, there are many, many things that you can learn also through these books.
I was just at the Water Symposium in Tamara in Portugal.
Yeah.
And my impression, there was a great deal of talk about, we had people from, I think, 27 different countries, and obviously many from Germany and Portugal, and a great deal of talk about what was happening economically and politically in Europe. And it seemed to me that that what's happening in Greece and some of the other countries in Portugal and the explosion of debt is really encouraging more people to consider moving to eco-villages. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with this, because I think in times of difficulties like we are living right now at a global level, where you can really see that the systems are crumbling and that they're not the same anymore, that the world is not the same as 5 years ago, and I think more and more people are becoming aware that the way how the world is going cannot continue like this, because it just cannot. So going back to more concrete and real values like the ones that you can find also in the eco-villages is something very appealing to people at the moment.
Right, and to young people. I'm always amazed at how many young people seem to be flooding in.
Yeah, but the young people, that's very understandable, because young people have their ideals, have high ideals. You know, usually when you're coming from a teenager, you have very high ideals, and when you're a young adult, they're still there. And then at a certain point, you start to kind of, to adapt to the systems that you are living in.
Uh-huh.
But when you're very young, the ideals and so you want the world to be right. And I think eco-villages really want to create new models where you have a more correct way of living, you know, amongst human beings and with nature and so on. So I think that this is also a reason why it's very appealing to young people.
It's interesting, when I was in Tamara, I'm always, Benjamin Mendelsohn, I'm always squabbling with him. He's always saying, well, what's the new model? And I keep saying to him, Benjamin, it's models, plural.
Exactly.
It's models.
Yes. And this is exactly it. For example, in Damanhur, we have had the dream. We've always had the dream for many, many years that the future should be of communities, all very diverse, completely diverse, with all their different fields of research, with different ways of doing things. Because, you see, in nature, diversity is very important.
Yes.
Actually, the things happen where you have systems that are at the edges of the systems, where they touch. And I think this is the same also for the human beings. I think that people are more alive and feel better when they are the cutting edges of something, you know, so, and especially when they're on the corners of different systems that meet. So many new things and many new ideas can be born. And this is something that makes you feel alive. So, people like that. And I think this is really something that I personally would be very looking forward to.
Me as well. Okay, so tell us about GEN. How did it get started? What does it do? And where is it going?
Well, at the moment, GEN is having a very big moment of transformation as well, because it's developing from a simply grassroots movement that was more a container, more a yin situation, also to a young situation. So we are offering advices and also participations in some programs. For example, we collaborated with the German government for the last year, also by they asked us to develop a project for North Africa, because there are lots of problems in North Africa, and to try to find a solution for that seems like, for example, something was seen in Senegal, because in Senegal there has been always a very strong Gen Africa network, where actually traditional communities were just starting to develop after and becoming eco-villages. So from this, when the government saw this and saw that compared to other traditional villages who have not done this step, the people were staying there and they were very happy and they were developing things instead of going away and going to the big cities, they started to say, well, we have to create eco-villages. We have to transform traditional villages into eco-villages. And so they made a program that they want to transform 14,000 traditional villages into eco-villages. And
wow.
The resources that they have for development to put them into that. And in this case, it really means to bring, first of all, to bring through photovoltaic, to have water in the places and to have electricity in the places. And with electricity, you can have internet, because the young people nowadays, they need internet. They want to feel connected to the world. Mm-hmm. So rather than going and live in slums on the outside of the big cities, it's much more appealing to go into a place where you have fruit trees for every season, where you have water, where you have internet, where you have a connection with the world, but in the same time you also have the connection with your traditions, with because there are still many traditions that are alive, that are really, we can learn a lot from, we Westerners, you know. Especially in the African and South America, you have really lots of traditions that are incredible as far as the social is concerned, where we can only learn from. So really to integrate the old ways with the new ways and to build something new. And so when the German government heard about this, and that we have been involved also in the developing of the Senegal network, then they asked us to create a project, for example, for the Northern African countries. And so we made a conference, and we had different EDE courses, because the Eco-Village Design Education course really delivers many tools. So we had people coming to Siebenlinden in Germany, for example, because Koscha Joubert, who is the president of Gen International and also the secretary of Gen Europe, is very active in developing. She's the main actor, actually, in developing the African network, because she was born in South Africa, and so this is a question that is very dear to her heart as well. And so all these kind of things are happening, and then we created a database that will give the opportunity not only to communities and eco-village projects, so projects that are not yet eco-villages but want to become, that are going into the direction of becoming an eco-village, but also in the future to green businesses, to everybody who really wants to work according to a certain, with ethics and with high ideals and towards sustainability in all the different fields, and sustainability, and even more than sustainability, the new word, which is resilience.
Yeah. One of the things I find it very fascinating, I was looking at the Gen website, and fascinating the idea of, you know, you think of eco-villages as something that people get together and start. The idea of a traditional village suddenly showing up and saying, well, how do we transform into an eco-village? It's kind of like, oh, well, that's a very interesting idea.
Yeah.
I hadn't realized it was happening, but of course it makes perfect sense that it is. Okay, so talk a little bit about your group at Dominhur, your cluster. You're in charge of international networking. What exactly does that mean, and what is it that you do?
Oh, we do very simple things in a certain sense. So, for example, I do this networking work for with the international communities. I do it both for Dominhur as well as for my Nucleo. So I'm in a double role in a certain sense, and I combine them. And So, for example, what we do is that when we have people from international communities, we host them very often. We try to exchange best practices. We talk a lot. We exchange. We do PowerPoint presentations. Some of our people go to the different communities and see them. And so there's a very, very simple person-to-person thing as well happening, as well as having email contact, you know. So
I'm always astonished. I'll never forget. When you check in at the gatehouse at the farm in Tennessee, there's all sorts of material to help you understand who they are and what they do. And there's one long list that shows all the different activities that they're doing around the world to help people in other places or take the knowledge that they've learned and invest it elsewhere. And I brought it back to Franklin Sanders, who is, among other things, my pastor. And he looked at his wife and he said, he looked at the list, this extraordinary, you know, I think there are about 30 efforts going on around the world where people at the farm are helping someone or teaching something, and he looked at his wife and he said, "Susan, these people are better Christians than we are."
Yeah, I can understand that, you know.
I always think of Echo Village as this, I don't know why, you know, you tell me if my impression is right, because I'm not that knowledgeable as being populated by people who love people. So
yes.
Yeah, it's an entrepreneurial and people caring group of people in my experience. Well,
yes,
go ahead.
I agree. I definitely agree. Yeah.
Well, Makiko, you've been very, very generous with your time. Before we close today, I would love it if you would just describe for the subscribers, if we want to stay in touch and stay in contact and be able to know what you're doing and what you're up to, how do we keep abreast of your work?
So there's a big opportunity right now in July, from the 10th to the 13th, in the Eco Valley Foundation in Hungary. There will take place the Eco Village Network Conference, with many, many international speakers, very interesting, and I really would invite you also to come, Catherine, and it's really something it's a very nice meeting for 3 days, and actually 4 days.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, and it's in Hungary.
Uh-huh.
And if you go on our website, the geneurope.org, you will find it.
Uh-huh.
And another way, for example, if you want to know more about Damanhur, just go on damanhur.org, and you'll find a huge website in all different languages. I mean, you need English, but maybe some people, it's also in Spanish. It's in many, many different languages. You will find information and everything that's going on. And again, on the GEN website, you will find all the different indications how to find the different communities. And I really would like to invite everybody to come to Damanhur, to come to see Findhorn, to come to see Siebenlinden, Zeg, Tamera, because it's if you don't know what to do with your, how to spend your holidays, and you want to really spend a holiday that is different from normal, come to see us.
Oh, I think it's a great idea for you know, a vacation, because you not only do you have fun, but you dip into a whole new world. And it's a world that's growing. It's a world that's exciting. And there's so many different things and places right now that don't feel hopeful. And you get into an eco village and everybody's, you know, doing and things are growing. And it's really quite, you know, it's really quite exciting and gratifying to be inside of that.
Thank you. I really think, I just want to add that I think that, for example, one thing when the people ask us why we built the temples of humankind in Damanhur, because it's a completely crazy endeavor. And it's crazy, you know. But and we say, because it shows that you can make it. It shows that a small group of human beings really committed, they can do almost everything. And this is exactly to touch upon what you just said, the hope. I think hope is so important in this moment of time. And hope is the thing that really keeps us alive and that helps us to believe that a different world is possible. And I personally do believe that a different world is possible, also because here in Damanhur I'm really living in a different world. Of course it's not perfect, because perfection is not of this world, and many things can be bettered. But for sure it is a start to really live on a different level of understanding of what life is about, I think.
Right, of joy.
Of joy, of happiness, and of really feeling connected with the others. Feeling the others really like we are all one human family, rather than we are one fighting against each other, you know.
It's interesting. I always have a movie, a lot of times on the Solaria Report I do a movie, and there's a wonderful movie called As It Is in Heaven. Have you seen it?
No.
Wonderful. It's wonderful. I really recommend it to you. It's a Swedish movie. But
yeah.
It's the story of a very famous musician who comes back to a Swedish village. And he ends up taking over the church choir. And what happens is a process whereby everyone clears their issues of all their... He's trying to build a group of people that can produce a true artistic production. But to do that, everybody has to work out all the lies and get over all the lies and the absence of trust. You know, they have to build a group of people who trust each other, which means they have to deal with all the sort of psychic garbage of all the things that have gone wrong and all the betrayals that they've made of each other. And it's quite funny to watch him lead this group of people to work out all their issues and come back to a place of trust. And the magical things that happen when people get to a point where they really can trust each other and together use their imagination to create something beautiful. So you see it, and I recommend that to you.
I will get it, yeah.
You have been very generous with your time, and I thank you very much. If there's anything we at the Solaria Report can ever do to support your efforts, please do let us know. And
thank you.
We're in cahoots, and we wish you the best and best of luck and the best for your conference in July.
Thank you so much, and I really thank you for having me called into this interview and to spread some ideas about eco-villages. And I really hope to meet you again soon, and maybe even in Hungary. But
oh, that would be wonderful, but I'm fully booked for July. But I would love, do you have one every year, or?
Yeah, one every year. Next year in July will be the next one. So maybe next year.
Do you know where it's going to be?
We don't know yet. It will be probably in Swiss.
Okay.
And probably in the same, it's always in the beginning of July, between the 6th and the 15th.
Okay, well, I will keep an eye out.
Great.
Okay, have a great day. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Catherine. All the best.
There you have it. A wonderful introduction to Eco Villages from Akeko Tamarice from the Damanhur community in Italy. Coming up, we have precious metals next week. This week, Franklin is in North Carolina, and I'm in Tennessee. Next week, I'm going to be in North Carolina. Franklin's going to be in Tennessee. So I'll be doing the Precious Metals Market Report remotely. We have a great deal to talk about. Franklin and I are going to be joined by my ceiling partner, Chuck Gibson. We've gotten many questions on sort of what are the issues and the vehicles that you can use to hedge your precious metals. So we're going to be talking about the pros and cons and various options. Then on June 21st, John Rappaport, we have Best Books for the 21st Century, Part 1. John and I could not possibly do all the best books in one sitting, so we're going to do Part 1. And then on July 4th, the quarterly second quarter wrap-up. So until we speak with Franklin next week on Precious Metals Market Report, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.